Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, helping families love their homes again. Inspiration at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. About 3 years ago, on June 24th, 2022, a violent altercation started in the parking lot of a Hazelwood Quick Trip. That incident was caught on video. It ended at the Hazelwood Police Department with a red Mustang driving directly into the department's building, specifically a brick wall around its jail. The owner of that car was a man named Philip March, but he was not the driver of the car. In fact, March had just survived an attempted carjacking, and the man who attacked him was also in the car. But it was March, the victim, whom police focused on.
When they arrived, they asked, "Who car was this?" And I told them it was my car. They was like, "Well, put your hands behind your back, you're going to jail." Because they was mad, and they was just like angry for some reason. I couldn't understand. I was like, "Let me tell you what happened. Let me explain to you what happened." And no one wanted to hear my side of the story. So if you look at the police report, you'll never see my side of the story in the police report, because for some reason they wanted to make him the victim after he assaulted me.
Next week, March faces trial for $10,000 worth of damage to the Hazelwood Police Department. It's a case that's dragged on for more than 3 years. And here with me now to talk about why that is and what video tells us about what happened at the Hazelwood Police Department that night, I'm joined by St. Louis on the Air producer, Danny Wisentowski. Danny, welcome.
Great to be here, Elaine.
Danny, you are the reporter of an investigation out today. It involves the incident we briefly described as we began the show, something that occurred on June 24th, 2022 in Hazelwood, and then ended with a car crashing into the city's police department. Now, you've been investigating the police work and prosecution that followed, but what started this for you, Danny?
There are a lot of moving pieces in this incident, as you've just described, and that was kind of what really took my interest. Philip March, you know, reached out to me as a reporter and said, you know, "I'm facing this case, this prosecution. I'm the victim of a crime, and yet Hazelwood is prosecuting me." That's a pretty intense claim to make. It's unusual. And folks do pretty often contact me with cases, with criminal, you know, things they are going through. Not all of them, though, are things that we take the dive into investigating. But the fact that he had this documented, he had this video surveillance, and the circumstances of this legal case really just brought up a lot of really intense questions about why he's had to go through this for several years.
Now, this story involves security footage, which you can watch at our website. That's stlpr.org. Danny, what does that video evidence show?
So this is an incident from early in the morning, about 1:15 in the morning, on that date in June 2022. The video, as folks can see, shows Philip March arriving at this Quick Trip in the red Mustang. He's there with his friend at the time, Jamez Block. And what unfolds really over only several minutes of footage is Jamez attacking Philip March in this Quick Trip, stealing his keys, dashing back to the car, and Philip March incredibly diving after Jamez in the driver's seat of the car that is now being stolen. This incident ends as the two continue fighting in this moving car. It ends at the Hazelwood Police Department when this red Mustang actually backs up into the wall of the police department, and both, you know, police immediately come out and see this scene. And what I've been investigating and following is what happened in that police investigation, why they focused on Philip March in this distinctive way, and how we get to the point where he's the only one now preparing for trial next week in a case that, you know, the video evidence seems to show he did not initiate.
Mm-hmm. And there is another person
Yes.
that you're talking about. There's a second man here, the apparent attacker. What is it that we know about him, Jamez Block, and what may have motivated what he did that night?
It's a difficult question. It's one of the first things I did ask Philip March. You know, I tried to reach out to Jamez Block, and I have not been successful. And it also seems like the court system has been trying to reach him and not being successful, having mail returned. What we do know, what Philip says, is that they had known each other for years. They were living at the same address at the time. And that Jamez had some kind of crisis, some kind of break. And obviously, this is Philip telling us this. We don't know the details of what happened. Jamez later told police he claimed that that Philip March was the person who attacked him in this car, but that just isn't what the video shows, and unless we know more, everything that we have in this evidence shows Jamez Block dashing into this store once Philip March is really actually trying to get help for himself in this moment. He knows something is wrong with Jamez, and instead Jamez attacks him.
Mm-hmm. Does the video surveillance, that is, align with what police say happened in the incident?
You know, that's one of the things that really started to stand out as I analyzed this video and began to go into the police reports and hospital records that Philip March provided to us. What does stand out immediately, though, is that the police reference of who is driving this car changes in different ways, despite the fact that they reference the same video. And so, you know, what I really went into first is trying to figure out, why did Philip March jump into the open driver's side door of his car as it's reversing, as Jamez Block is stealing his car? And this is what Philip March told me.
So I knew where the police department was at. So after I jumped through the window to try to get my car back, I could kind of stirred a little bit. I wouldn't let him turn right or left onto Lindbergh. The only thing he could do was go straight across. And then once he realized that we was at the police station, that's when he kicked me in the face and kicked me out the car again.
So this incident ends very dramatically at the Hazelwood Police Department. How did this carjacking or attempted carjacking turn into a car crash, into a building?
So this incident, as chaotic as it sounds, Philip March describes, you know, fighting for control over the steering wheel and really having this plan that was in his head when he first parked at the Quick Trip. He claims that he knew something was wrong with Jamez, that he was going into the store to contact security. The clerk in the store confirms this. You know, Philip March is looking for help and is planning to contact the police when he is attacked. And so he jumps into the car. Half of his body is in the moving vehicle, half of it is out. It is a very terrifying moment for him. And he then eventually manages to fight Jamez, guide the car to the best he can. They make it a very short distance to the Hazelwood Police Department. And that's where this collision happens. And this is the way Philip March described it to me.
When he kicked me in the face, he actually kicked me out the car. And then he put the car in drive. And he pulls off so fast, And you got to imagine, I have a Mustang. So the thrust from the engine slammed the door on me and had me hemmed up between the door and the car. So when he drove off, it was only maybe like 20 feet away. He hit a wall.
And just to clarify, you know, the car is driving forward into this wall. Philip March, it's a little hard to imagine, but this is shown on video. He has been hanging on between this open car door and Jamez in the driver's seat this entire time. And you can see Jamez Block kick Philip March in the head. You can clearly see two people exit the driver's side of this door. Philip March is first because he was the one who dove in, and then comes Jamez. And that, you know, it really ends that way. And you can see the red and light police lights shine. And at that point, though, Philip March finds himself in a very strange situation where he is the prime suspect of this incident.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is the city of Hazelwood that is pursuing this case. What does Hazelwood and its prosecuting attorney say about the case?
So this case, you know, it went through different developments. The short version of it is that currently, you know, as of last year in September, Hazelwood finally charges Jamez Block, the man who attacked Philip March, with property damage. But it also has charged Philip March with the same thing. And this has followed Hazelwood charging Philip March with a DWI, claiming that he was drunk, that officer smelled alcohol on his breath. That charge was dropped just days before these additional property damage charges have happened. So there have been different legal developments. The short version, though, is that Hazelwood, in continuing this prosecution, believes that Philip March is responsible for the property damage to the wall of the police department. He's going to be facing trial on Monday. Jamez Block, although he is charged with property damage, you know, mail has been returned. He is not facing trial. And this is kind of a strange, conflicting situation where you have the police officers, the prosecutor, cite this video, And they're saying, oh, it shows Philip March leave the driver's door of the car. He is responsible for this accident. And Block, the other man there, seems to just disappear in this narrative. And he is perhaps will face justice someday if this trial comes to. But Philip March is the one who is now in this kind of absurd tangle explaining why his car was involved in this incident, but the video shows he wasn't driving it.
Mm-hmm. Now, March is not just taking this. He's alleging that Hazelwood's prosecutor is retaliating against him. And part of his argument involves Carr's role. This is Stephanie Carr, her role as the prosecutor for Ferguson 10 years ago. Why is March drawing this connection?
You know, there's a couple things. You know, Philip March was a leading part of an effort by an activist group called Ground Level Support. And in 2015, 2016, they were calling and campaigning for the resignations of the officials in Ferguson. And the folks, these were the folks who had been called out by the Department of Justice reports, the folks who had faced criticism about the municipal court system, the way that fines were being, you know, seemingly extracted in a predatory way. And Philip March, you know, 10 years later is saying, hey, it's the same prosecutor that I advocated against. She's got it out for me. Now, Stephanie Carr denies this flatly, says there's no connection and says that March has not brought, you know, the evidence for this. Philip March, though, is alleging retaliation because he faced this much more serious DWI charge. He was going to go to trial for this. You know, the police said that he smelled of alcohol. They even had a photo of a bottle of rum. But those charges completely get dropped right after Hazelwood gives Philip March this damning video showing the attack on him earlier that night. And so, you know, now what is happening is he's saying, you know, Stephanie Carr dropped that charge, but then days later charged me again. That's retaliation. She knew that I was going to file a lawsuit. Philip March, I should note, is filing a civil lawsuit. And the timing of that is involved in his retaliation claim. He's saying the prosecutor found out the civil case is coming, and now she's hitting him with new criminal charges. I did ask Stephanie Carr and Hazelwood for comment on this case, and she did not respond to some more detailed questions. And the prosecutor who was going to be prosecuting Philip March has declined to give comment to me and respond to questions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in court, Danny, last week, covering a pretrial hearing. What happened there?
This was a hearing where, you know, Philip March and the prosecutor who's now taking this case, his name is Matt Brown. He's actually been appointed by Hazelwood out of an abundance of caution. You know, what happened there that really stood out to me is that Philip March actually showed the video of this incident to the prosecutor who's going to be taking this case to trial. It seemed like that prosecutor, Matt Brown, had not seen this evidence before. That's just my subjective sense of watching their reactions. But, you know, Matt Brown is going to be arguing this case again to try to show that Philip March is responsible for this damage. He made an offer, the prosecutor to Philip March, that they would drop this charge if only Philip March would agree to a lesser charge. I think it was illegal parking, I believe. Philip March rejected this. He wants to fight this case all the way to the end, even though you know, this is a difficult, expensive process to do, and Philip March is representing himself.
Did he say anything to you about why he's made this decision to go this far?
He, you know, feels that the principle of this case, the fact that Hazelwood continued to argue, imply, you know, overtly put him in the role of the perpetrator of this when he went through something quite terrible, to have his friend attack him, to really have his life in danger. The video of this shows just how close his body was to being pulled in a really dangerous direction as this car is moving, as his, you know, one leg is on the ground and the other is inside. I think he's taken this personally, to be honest, but he also sees the principles that he has advocated against. Stephanie Carr is someone that he's spoken about before. He's seeing another example, he says, of injustice happening in this court system, and he wants this case to be dropped, and he wants Stephanie Carr as the prosecutor to be held accountable for her role in this.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking here about a few years ago, but clearly what happened and what we see in that Quick Trip video, it still very much has an effect on Philip March, right?
Absolutely. He is clearly still very affected by what he survived and went through. The legal consequences of being charged with a DWI, and as he did, refusing a breathalyzer test and a blood test, that had real legal consequences for his ability to drive. And I think a lot of folks might look at this and, again, see, like, he's getting an easy way out. He's been given an option to drop this charge. He, though, is very adamant that is not what he wants to do, and he doesn't want to give Hazelwood the victory of any kind of conviction. And this pattern of pleading down to lower charges, I think, is very familiar to a lot of folks who have gone through the municipal system in St. Louis County. Prosecutors like Stephanie Carr, I think Philip March is made this a mission for himself, that it symbolizes more than just this case. But this is his life that he's really taken into his hands once again, and he's going to be in court on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Danny, what is next for this case?
You know, like I said, we have this trial coming up on Monday. You know, I will be there to see, will Hazelwood continue this line of argument and evidence? Will there be other witnesses they can bring? And will we hear from Jemez Block in some way? Will he be located? I'm very interested and hoping to tell some of his story if he's willing to talk with me. But overall, I think we're going to see a return to a lot of the same issues of, you know, the power and the role of prosecutors like Stephanie Carr, who, you know, is a municipal prosecutor in, I believe, about 8 different municipalities around St. Louis County. So I'm interested to see what happens in this case that has dragged on, has such unusual components, a car crash and a carjacking, but also a fight between an activist and a prosecutor that has simmered for about a decade and is about to get its next chapter.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any expectation or anticipation that after we've had this conversation that you will hear either from Stephanie Carr or from Hazelwood and its prosecutor?
You know, with this being an active case, you know, I think they have to, you know, deliver comment within the boundaries of what they feel is appropriate. I think I'm hoping we get more information during the trial and perhaps afterward. But I think they've made their stance pretty clear that they do not want to touch this at this time.
Mm-hmm. What is it that interests you most about what is happening with this case, especially given what you have, what you've reported on, what you've investigated about people who are facing trial and situations where even with video evidence that seems to point very clearly to one thing, there's something happening in another way in the justice system?
I think we very rarely get an example of the way that a police report and the narratives that in text create the legal conditions for charges, for someone to actually go to jail. To see such a contradiction in the way that it is placed against the video, I think is instructive. And I think it shows the way that even though this case happened right outside the Hazelwood Police Department, these officers seem to struggle figuring out what exactly happened, the sequence of events, and we are still in that place years later, even though we have video evidence and timestamps showing everything that happened, the amount of people who were there, and who was in that driver's seat. And I think it's just a case, again, that where you can have something right in front of your face, but if you have enough people misunderstand or describe it in different ways, suddenly a very simple story becomes complicated.
Mm-hmm. What was the biggest challenge with this reporting, Danny?
A lot of this is that Philip March is an unusual plaintiff. He is stepping forward, providing details of a case where he is accused of something he is denying. And yet he wanted us to see all of the information, the hospital records that don't show any mention of alcohol, a video of something terribly traumatic. And I, you know, was familiar with Philip March a bit and what his group had done. And returning to the way that prosecutors have incredible leeway and incredible power to put these cases together, even when it feels like, you know, just, you know, I was just one person watching this video several times, tracking who was there, when did it happen, and it seems like this could have been ascertained earlier. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that people reading this and seeing this comparison is just how easy prosecution and police and the basic details of an event can become tangled, and how difficult it can be to untangle those.
Mm-hmm. Producer Danny Wisentowski's investigation of Hazelwood's prosecution of Philip March is at our website. That's stlpr.org. You can also find there the surveillance footage for yourself, which we've talked about today. Danny, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.